The proposed state budget is now in the hands of the Assembly after the Joint Finance Committee passed it on a 12-4 party line vote early yesterday morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, June 6th. We will talk with four state legislators during this hour. They will weigh in on various aspects of the budget, including an income tax cut, the expansion of private school vouchers, Medicaid funding, and more. And if you have a question or a reaction to the new proposed state budget as passed by the Joint Finance Committee, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Maybe we can kind of expand this from yesterday's big question when we asked you, do you think that the proposed budget is good or bad for Wisconsin? Let us know what you think is the best part of the budget or the worst part of the budget. Let me welcome our first lawmaker. Jennifer Schilling is a state senator from La Crosse. She is the ranking Senate Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. I know that you are not a fan of this private school voucher plan. You were quoted as saying we have supersized vouchers in the state and saying it's vouchers on steroids. What do you mean, and why are you so upset by this?
Well, really, after days of backroom deals and special interest input, the budget that was approved by the Republican Party leaders, it continues the same failed policies of the past. It eliminates affordable health care options for working families. It takes more money from our local public schools to subsidize an unaccountable and underperforming private voucher school program, and it fails to make the immediate investment and proven job creation programs that are needed to jumpstart Wisconsin's struggling economy. And as we looked at expanding vouchers, the voucher program in the state, the governor had originally proposed 9 districts that it would be expanded to, and now suddenly we find ourselves that all 422 school districts here in the state will now be eligible for the voucher program. We've never had a hearing on this statewide expansion, and it's beyond having just kind of the camel's nose under the tent. We've got the whole camel is now within the tent with a bunch of its friends. So it's really disturbing as we are defunding and kind of privatizing public education in the name of vouchers.
You know, but there is an increase in school funding of $150 per pupil. So why do you say it's defunding public education?
Well, in the last budget, 2 years ago, our school saw a historic cut of $1.6 billion. And the Democrats on the committee, we would have liked to have seen an increase of $275 per pupil per year to try to mitigate some of those cuts. We wouldn't have made the schools whole from the cut from last year, but we would have tried to erase some of that cut. Even at $150 per year per pupil, $300 increase for those public school students, school districts are still going to have to sharpen their pencils and go through the exercise of cuts and look at different cutting curriculums and not filling staff positions that are available. So even at $150 per pupil, I've heard from school districts in western Wisconsin that it still means that they are going to have to go through really painful cuts within their school district.
Yeah, and how do you, Senator Schilling, react to the Republican argument for doing this, that this is going to give lower-income parents more choice as to where they send their children, hoping that this will afford them a better education than they might be able to get in a public school?
Well, this voucher program has grown so far afield from originally 23 years ago or so when it was first introduced in the city of Milwaukee for low-income minority students. And now we have expanded the eligibility so that, you know, families making up to $77,000 would be eligible for this program. It will now have a tax credit for families that send their students to a voucher school. You know, under the GOP, the public schools would have received $150 per pupil, but the voucher schools will receive $768 for K through eighth grade students, and almost over $1,400 per high school pupil. So as we look at, you know, kind of the original intent of this program and dealing with children in poverty, it has grown so far from its original mission, you know, 20 years ago when it was first introduced to the state.
Well, you also said that Republicans are committing fiscal malpractice for turning down federal funding for Medicaid. What's your biggest fear with regard to health care for lower income residents?
Well, what was really heartening as the committee went on the road earlier this spring and went to different communities around the state, and there were broad groups that were calling upon the legislature to accept the federal money to strengthen Badger Care. We had a group of more than 40 different health care providers and health systems across the state that had contacted us, different health advocacy groups that many of the, you know, we looked at and said, this really is a no-brainer, that the fact that we could cover more people here in the state at a reduced cost to taxpayers makes sense. The Democrats wanted to look at accepting that federal money and being able to offer an affordable, accessible health care to almost 85,000 more of Wisconsin's neighbors and community neighbors and residents here in the state. But rather, the Republicans decided to reject that money and ensure less people, but for more money here in the state. And it just really does not make sense. And it was really one of those kind of head scratchers that we were disappointed that the kind of ideology kind of trumped good, sound fiscal practice as far as offering insurance and accessible, affordable health care to Wisconsin's families.
Yeah, so my understanding is while 80-some thousand lower-income people are going to be knocked off Badger Care, they could purchase from the federal exchanges under the Affordable Care Act. Won't that be an option for them?
Well, as we debated this, I mean, those people who are still will be eligible will be making about $12,000. But if you're making a little over that, you now are expected to go through the exchanges and find insurance on the private market, which is going to be very expensive as far as the copays and the premiums. And we weren't being intellectually honest, I think, with people who find themselves struggling to make ends meet. And now the concern and angst of finding affordable health care for their family and hoping that nobody gets sick, nobody gets injured, and nobody is required to utilize health care, because that's when the expensive copays and things will kick in, and it'll be, you know, really hard and difficult for them to kind of continue to prioritize with health care costs skyrocketing and having those additional thousands of dollars that now they have to pay out of pocket.
Yeah, so have you recovered from that overnight session? Why did that have to happen?
Yeah, that was a day where we kind of had to hurry up and wait around. That I think on the Republican side, they kind of had to come to an understanding of what the right hand and what the far right hand wanted to do later in the day when it came to the income tax cut, when it came to public education and the expansion of vouchers. So it was an all-nighter, and after you go in and you're kind of meeting throughout the night, and then you suddenly find yourself leaving the Capitol when the sun is coming up. I always tell people at that point, happiness is the Capitol in the rearview mirror.
So, oh, right.
I served in the Assembly for many years. We did overnighters, so this was something that was not unfamiliar to me, but it was certainly something that I think the Republicans were still not quite square with what they wanted to do and having all their members on board, and they really need to work throughout the night to meet with those special interest groups and with others in private meetings.
We have just a minute to go. Do you, Senator Schilling, see any changes whatsoever occurring with the budget document that passed Joint Finance Committee before it passes the full legislature?
Well, Well, now the Assembly is scheduled to take it up in about a week and a half, and the Senate will take it up after that. And so the next, 2 weeks, this will really marinate, and the public can see what happened in the last days of the Finance Committee. Many news stories will be written about this, and so kind of it will get out what the many motions contained and what we voted on and the impact that it'll have. Both legislative leaders, the Republican leader, the Assembly, and the Senate were very confident that they had the votes, going into the Assembly and the Senate with their members, that they really hoped that this was going to be, that they saw this as the final document that they would be voting on. Now, there might be some minor technical changes that are needed, but certainly the heavy lifting of the state budget process really was completed in the Joint Finance Committee.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jennifer Schilling, State Senator from La Crosse, the ranking Senate Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee. Coming up next, we will welcome in the ranking Assembly Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee, Corey Mason, a state representative from Racine. And we do welcome your input, your reactions, your questions about the state budget at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Quick check of the weather for today. Cloudy, cool, a chance of rain. We can expect high temperatures statewide near 60, except low 50s near Lake Superior. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, June 6th. We're doing a legislative roundup, talking with different lawmakers about the state budget during this hour. Two Democrats during this half hour, two Republicans in our next half hour, and you too if you have a question or a view on the state budget. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next guest is Corey Mason, state representative from Racine and the ranking Assembly Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I thought that we were not supposed to have the state legislature doing these all-nighters, meeting overnight. What happened?
We weren't. We've actually had a good precedent this year in the Assembly where we haven't gone past 10 o'clock once this year and changed the rules accordingly to not be able to do that. But apparently, when I came to the Joint Finance Committee on the last day, Republicans seemed content to... We took a break at 3 o'clock and told we would be back at 5 o'clock and then didn't come back until 1 in the morning with a massive set of proposals that most people hadn't heard or seen or had any chance to review. And we did that from 1 in the morning till about 6 in the morning, and Republicans insisted on moving those policies through.
Yeah, like this tax cut, we might have heard about it, but this is a lot bigger of a tax cut than we thought, isn't it?
It is, and more importantly, it's a tax cut that really benefits the folks that make six figures or more, the wealthy. More than half of it goes to the top 20% of wage earners. So it's not really a middle-class tax cut. And they pay for it, Joy, almost dollar for dollar from the cuts that they made from K-12 education last time. So if you compare the dollar amount of what they put into the tax cut and compare to what they cut out of schools last year, it's pretty close. It's about $750 to $800 million. So they're really paying for a tax cut that benefits the rich by stealing that from school children. And I think that's not in the interest of the middle class in the state, and it's something I think we're going to hear more about in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Talk more why you say it benefits the rich.
Well, if you look at the breakdown of where the money goes, again, so if you make median household income about $52,000 a year, you'll see $9 a month. If you, or $100 or so a year, if you make six figures or more, or around $300,000 or more, you're now in a roughly similar tax rate, and are going to see benefits of about $1,500 a year. So most 55% of the tax benefit goes to the top 20%, those making six figures or more. And, I know in a community like Racine where, it's 13% unemployment and there's just normal working class folks, when I talk to them and say, what would you rather have, $9 a month in a tax cut or know that your kids and grandkids can go to a good public school, it's not even close. People think we should be reinvesting that money in public schools.
Yeah. AJ on Facebook says, so most of the benefits of the tax cut go to those that pay most of the taxes. How is that corrupt? There is a debate going on in on the Facebook page. We've gone from a $3.6 billion shortfall to a $500 million surplus. Should the money go to those that don't pay into the system?
Well, it's not going to those who don't pay into the system. That you have to have, you have to pay income tax to get the tax credit. But again, they're taking the money that was once going to public schools and putting into a tax cut that is not a middle class tax cut. It's a tax cut that benefits the wealthy. So Democrats, after we couldn't get the money restored to schools, said, "Well, if you're going to do this tax cut, why don't you at least do it in a way where you're lowering the bottom two brackets so that it would actually benefit, so that the majority of it would actually go to the middle class, people making, you know, less than $70,000 a year." And the Republicans decided not to do that, and really, I mean, sort of, you know, revealed themselves for what they really were wanting to do. It's not about a middle class focus for them on tax cuts or schools or anything else. It's about getting more money to folks who do quite well and waiting for the rest of us to hope that it trickles down. But unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way.
Something that's in the budget that there wasn't a lot of attention on before this week was that there will be a tax credit for parents who choose to send their children to private schools. This is not the private school voucher program.
It's not, but it is. I mean, it's basically instead of giving parents a voucher,
right,
you're going to give them a tax deduction, which is a very similar mechanism. It's going to cost $30 million in this first year and be expanded dramatically, where parents will get a $4,000 deduction if kids are in K through 8 schools and a $10,000 deduction if they're in high schools. And it really is a dramatic shift from public schools and funding those to adequately educate the 800,000 schools that we have, and shifting more public resources to private schools.
We have callers. Ivy in Evansville has a comment. Hi, Ivy.
Hi. Your last two speakers have made many of the points that I'd want to make, and there's so much wrong with this budget. But I want to tell you the effect it's had on my school. My child went to the Evansville schools, and in the last year, we've had debates about whether to remove a math, science, language arts teacher from the high school and the same from the middle school, and a health teacher, and our gym and music teacher from the elementary. These effects would mean that our pep band, which incidentally the music teacher spends his after hours working on, and all these band activities would be cut because they would have to fill in the elementary. It would mean that...
Ivy, I wish we could... probably you have a long list of examples, and we only have a couple of minutes with Representative Mason. You have similar concerns for public education?
I do. I hear those same stories from Racine Unified School District, the school district that I represent. They had to lay off several teaching assistants, I think almost 20 teaching assistants, after the cuts, after they made the big concessions with teachers and took away their bargaining rights. And, you know, the $150 per pupil doesn't even keep up with inflation. So you've got school districts that are going to have to look at another round of cuts while we're giving tax breaks that favor the rich and putting more money into private, unaccountable voucher schools.
Yeah, lots of other issues. So I want to move on to Jim in Wausau. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I got a question about something on the budget that was in the budget that the Finance Committee had approved. They approved the Department of Administration to start selling off state properties like power plants, state highways, public buildings at the colleges, campuses, so on and so forth. Whatever happened on that?
It was included by the Republicans in the budget, and I raised serious concerns about that for many of the reasons you might imagine, right? I mean, to say that state parks or highways or other things could be privatized isn't in the public interest, because then the public who paid for those things with our tax dollars are suddenly going to have to pay fees to a private entity to access those public benefits. So I think it's deeply concerning, and it's another reason we shouldn't have policy items like this put in the budget.
Yeah, Annalise in Milwaukee is with us now, except I can't get her on the phone for some reason. Let's see. Annalise, can you hear me? Go ahead, Annalise.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I'm actually a student of UW-Platteville, and I'm part of United Council of UW Students, and I would just like to ask, our mandatory refundable fee, our main source of funding for United Council, which is a student-run student representative organization that's a statewide system thing. The MRF is being pulled by the JSC, and I was wondering how we can work to have that be preserved.
Yeah, okay. Can that be preserved?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. We're going to the Assembly and the Senate, and I would encourage student government activists from around the UW system to contact your legislator and ask them to reverse this. You know, we're doing a tuition freeze in large part. We did these hearings all over the state, and we heard from United Council students from every corner of the state who showed up at the hearings and respectfully and earnestly told their stories about student debt and did more to advocate for the UW, I think, than the administration or faculty or alumni did. And so at the end of the process, to sneak in a provision that basically decimates student government at campuses across the state is really shameful. So I think that if students like our caller care about this, and I know that they do, they need to call their legislators and ask them to reverse this decision.
Representative Mason, why did the Joint Finance Committee tell the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism to get out of Vilas Hall here on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus? This is where Wisconsin Public Radio is housed, is Vilas Hall. And tell the Board of Regents that no UW staffer can work with this center. What's going on?
Yeah, it's another example of petty retribution by the Republicans in the state budget. I mean, look, there's not a politician in the world that doesn't feel like they got a bad deal from a reporter at some point in their career. But to say that we don't like the work that the Investigative Journalism Center is doing because we don't like what they have to say, so we're going to basically evict them from the UW campus, is really petty, and it's beneath our democracy. I mean, we want a vibrant press corps. We want the First Amendment to mean something. And so to try to defund and target journalists that are doing good investigative work is really beneath the Republican Party. They can do better than that.
We have 30 seconds of your final remarks on this state budget that's going to the state assembly.
I mean, it's another state budget that favors the rich and goes down the path of hoping that trickle-down economic work, but it doesn't. This is a budget that deeply affects the middle class in negative ways and, you know, leaves us in an economic desert of inequality from the Republicans hoping that it'll trickle down. But it doesn't work, and the middle class taxpayers are going to pay the consequences.
Corey Mason, State Representative from Racine, the ranking Assembly Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Joy.
Coming up after the news, we will hear from Dale Cuyenga, Republican state representative from Brookfield, who is the author of that income tax cut. And we'll also hear from Republican state senator Dale Schultz just before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network. Our legislative roundup on the state budget continues in this half hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Thursday, June 6th. In our last half hour, we heard from two members, Democratic members of the Joint Finance Committee, State Senator Jennifer Schilling and State Representative Corey Mason. Now we will hear from two Republican state lawmakers, and we'll continue to hear from you. What do you think is the best thing or the worst thing about the proposed budget? The budget is now in the hands of the Assembly after the Joint Finance Committee passed it on a 12-4 party line vote yesterday morning. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our next guest is Dale Cuyenga. I mispronounced that earlier. Dale Cuyenga is a Republican state representative from Brookfield and a member of the Joint Finance Committee. He also led the effort to reform Wisconsin's tax code. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, and you can also thank Representative Mason for correcting my pronunciation of your name. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
He's
a the damn person.
Yeah. So thanks very much for joining us. You are the you're the author of this income tax cut, and you led this effort to reform the tax code. Why does Wisconsin need a $650 million income tax cut?
Wisconsin is one of the highest tax states in the country. We have the fourth highest property taxes and among the top 10 income taxes. If you look at the combination of all the taxes, our business taxes are in the top 10 as well. So, I mean, essentially what happened is we've had economic growth in Wisconsin, and as a direct result of that, we had over $550 million additional revenues. So I felt strongly, a lot of my colleagues felt strongly, that money should go back to families, primarily middle-income families, and it should also go back to businesses to create jobs.
Well, what about the critics who say that this goes mostly to the wealthy, that it benefits the rich more than it does the middle class or poor?
Yeah, essentially what happens is that the income taxes in Wisconsin are paid by everyone that pays taxes, obviously. And over 55% of taxes are paid by joint filers or filers that make over $100,000 a year. So when you go back to give back the money in proportion to what was paid, then there is going to be more money. There was actually 55% that went back to people making over $100,000. The way I compare this to, it's almost like you go out with your friends for a pizza and the bill comes and someone puts down $100, someone puts down $20. But when the change comes back, the guy who put down $20 wants to grab $60 in change. Essentially, all this is saying is that we're going to give you your taxes back in proportion to your taxes paid.
Yeah. We talked to Joe Winicky, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, yesterday, and he was saying things like, you know, Robert La Follette would be rolling over in his grave over the budget in general, but he thought especially this this tax cut was a big mistake. That it is this. Is this turning Wisconsin into a regressive tax system?
Not at all. We're still one of the most progressive among the top 10, 12, depending on what ranking you look at, most progressive taxes in the country, and this will not change that. Essentially, we actually firmed out the earned income tax credit. We put, I think it was $8 million, probably more, towards the earned income tax credit. As we did this reform, we actually got rid of business tax credits. We got rid of a lot of business tax credits. We did not get rid of or take away from or water down tax credits to help out the working poor, like the earned income tax credit, the homestead credit. We retain those. Wisconsin still has the second highest standard deduction in the whole country, which means if you're a joint filer, you don't pay taxes on your first $9,800 in income. That's 0% taxes. So at the end of the day, I mean, I feel very comfortable that we still have a system in place where the working poor, seniors with a home, that they still have a strong safety net there where they're not asked to pay income taxes or they're asked to pay a little bit of income taxes. So, I mean, our tax code is still over, the majority of our taxes are still paid by people making over $100,000 a year, even after this reform.
Dale on Facebook writes, "This is just another smoke and mirrors accounting system. By the end of this term, we will have twice the debt that we had when we started." Is this just one-time money that we're going to give away as income tax breaks, and then we're going to be in big trouble?
And just to clarify, it would be a different Dale, not this Dale.
Yes.
No, that does not double our debt, and it does not do that at all. That's just plainly false. And it does not take any money for bonding. It does not bond money to give it tax cuts. The bonding in the budget was the governor's bonding. Originally, we reduced that in joint finance. And this money in tax cuts is from the economic growth. The economic growth we had was $550 million. And we took $333 million of that for tax cuts. The rest of that money went to K-12 education. So we actually, you know, we didn't cut anything from K-12 education. We kept that. And we added over $100 million to K-12 education out of the growth. And we also took some of that growth and sent it back to the families that sent it to us in the first place.
Mm-hmm. We had a caller yesterday to the show who said, "This reminds me of when Republican Governor Lee Dreyfus gave away a surplus in the form of rebate checks, and then the next term of Governor Anthony Earl, there was a deficit. Is that going to happen?"
No, I don't think so. I mean, if we just have modest 1%, 2% growth, we are in very, very good shape. You know, you never know what the economy is going to do, the nationwide economy, the Wisconsin economy, but I feel strongly that we are coming over a hill here nationally and that we are heading in the right direction. And there's a lot of indications of that, you know, rankings and what's coming out right now that we're turning the corner here and we're doing well. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it reminds us of any historical event of tax cuts leading to deficits, because there's also very good indications in history where we cut taxes, which led to more economic growth. So No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't expect that at all.
So what are you hoping results from these tax cuts?
I hope that Wisconsin families aren't still among the highest taxed in the country. I mean, we still have a ways to go. I mean, I think this was sold as a very, very bold tax reform. I don't mean to downplay it. It was a big deal, but it wasn't. We didn't rewrite the whole tax code. We got rid of a lot of tax credits. We limited certain other tax credits for the wealthy, and then what we did is we lowered everyone's tax brackets. And so, my hope is that it's good for Wisconsin businesses, and Wisconsin businesses want to reinvest in their workforce, that they want to invest in new equipment that's made here in Wisconsin, and that families get some relief on their taxes so that they continue to put that money towards what their family values.
Do you have a reaction, Representative Coinga, to this report that was out yesterday that said Wisconsin was 49th in the nation in terms of economic growth or economic recovery?
Yeah, I've not seen that report, but I know there's other reports. I mean, there's always reports out there, and it seems like people have a tendency to grab the report that favors their story. There's other surveys out there that show that we're climbing on business rankings. There's, I talked to a lot of families that feel like we're turning the corner here. So I would have to get familiar with that report before I spoke to it.
Yeah, let's take a call from Sue in Milwaukee. Hello, Sue. What's your question?
I have a statement, actually two, just after listening to that. My husband and I both make over $100,000 a year, and we don't need that tax credit. And I work with people that make far less than I do, and I simply don't even know how they do it. And to think that that families that make $100,000 a year or more are going to be given more, it's just, I don't know how people can rationalize that decision. But what my statement is also is that I elected for religious reasons to send my kids to private Catholic school from K-4 through 8th grade. And not once would I have considered taking a tax credit for that. It was a religious reason. There's a separation between church and state. It was a decision that we made as a family. And I can tell you, in that entire time, I never met one family that could use a tax credit to send their kids to school there.
Thank you, Sue, because we have very limited time. Two very broad points there. Representative Coinga, she has grave concerns over especially this tax credit for parents who send their kids to private schools.
Yeah, and I can, first of all, let me cover the first point that she mm-hmm. doesn't mind paying the taxes at her income level, and that's great because I know individuals at my church. And when they get this money back, I know that they're going to spend that money on the Milwaukee Rescue Mission. They're going to spend that money on women's shelters. So when she gets this tax cut back, I would encourage her, and I see people in my community that I'm very encouraged by, that will use this extra money to go for not-for-profits and great organizations doing great things in our community. So and if they don't do that, they reinvest it, which also works out. So we didn't do a tuition credit. What there was in the budget was a tuition deduction, which is not as generous as a credit from a tax simplification point. I always like deductions better than credits. And essentially, yeah, there's a deduction from your income, so you pay less tax on your income. So if you make $40,000 and you send your kid to a private school, let's say they're fourth grade, you could take $4,000 off an income. So you take $40,000 minus four, you're only taxed on $36,000. It's not a credit. And essentially, I know there's a lot of people that send their kids to school. I mean, a lot of public schools, most public schools, majority of them around the state are high performing, are great, are among the best in the country. There's other places in our state where the public school is not performing as a system or not performing for that individual child. So this is some relief we can give to working families to, encourage them to choose an education that is best suited for their child's needs.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Dale Coinga is a Republican state representative from Brookfield, a member of the Joint Finance Committee. He was the author of this income tax cut that was passed in the Joint Finance Committee this week. We'll get another reaction to the proposed state budget coming up next from Republican State Senator from Richland Center, Dale Schultz. And we'll continue to take your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's going to be a cloudy, cool day today, according to our weather forecast. There's also a chance of rain. Highs today, most highs today around Wisconsin near 60 degrees. Stay with us. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we will welcome in the co-hosts of Wisconsin Foodie. And we'll talk about Wisconsin foods. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we are concluding our legislative roundup on the state budget. We heard from two Democrats in our first half hour, State Senator Jennifer Schilling from La Crosse, State Representative from Racine, Corey Mason. We just heard from Republican State Representative from Brookfield, Dale Coinga. And now we are very happy to welcome in Dale Schultz, Republican State Senator from Richland Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you on the show. Well, let me. You're the only guest we have on in this roundup that's not on the Joint Finance Committee.
I have been on the Joint Finance.
Oh, sure. But I wanted to know if you would have voted for this state budget if you were on the Joint Finance Committee.
No, I wouldn't, because to me, Wisconsin in 2013 is best summed up by a statement: bounty hunters, welcome; investigative reporters, not so much. I think that things have gotten way too extreme and out of hand. And when we start taking important policy issues about whether or not we're going to have bounty hunters in Wisconsin and throwing them in the middle of the night without any transparency, public discussion, or analysis, I think we have a problem. And when the legislature decides that it has the authority, the power, the right to dive into the university and start dictating things like the curriculum, the student placement of journalists, I think it is the height of arrogance, and everybody who voted for that should be ashamed. It smacks of the kind of tactics you would expect from Vladimir Putin or Hugo Chavez, not in Wisconsin. And that's how I'd like to begin my statement this morning.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit. Certainly, this is an issue that I'm familiar with, as the Center for Investigative Journalism currently has some offices, two rooms at Vilas Hall here on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. It's the same place as the Wisconsin Public Radio studios. And for listeners who are not familiar with this, the Joint Finance Committee in this budget item said that the center should get out of town, get out of Vilas Hall, and that the regents should forbid the university from having anybody work with or on this Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism.
This is childish behavior that is payback because somebody felt aggrieved. There's an easy way to handle investigative journalists. Open the door, let them in, and give them access to everything they want. I've been in the legislature 30 years. I've taken my lumps. But by and large, our democracy only thrives when everybody has the truth and the opportunity and the freedom to discuss that truth. That's what that institute represents, and the legislature ought to be able to show a little restraint when it comes to their feelings.
So do you think that this item might be taken out of the budget before it passes the full legislature?
Well, I am certainly hoping that if the legislature doesn't come to its senses, that Governor Walker will exercise some maturity and take this out. This sends a signal about our state that I don't think is very flattering, and find, personally deeply distressing. We can and must do better than that, and it serves as a sideshow to the important fiscal issues that are being discussed right now. The Philadelphia Fed just came out with a state-by-state analysis that showed Wisconsin ranks 49th in the Fed economic forecast. What they're saying is, in their leading index for each of the 50 states, over the next 6 months, that Wisconsin is expected to have its economy shrink by 0.74%. I certainly supported Governor Walker's tax cut. It's hard to be against tax cuts, But I think we need to think down the road and remember our past. It wasn't just but last session that we had an economic crisis because we had an enormous structural deficit. Now, I try not to be so dogmatic that I can't accept a small structural deficit. I think we, all of this is estimates. But I am very fearful that a vote was cast and positions hardened without full public scrutiny, without economic analysis, that very well may mean that we will be back in the soup here within a very short period of time when the next economic analysis comes in. Now, I hope and I pray that that does not happen. What will we do then? Blame government and come in with another round of draconian cuts? Or will we show a little restraint before we pass this budget, say no to a number of special interests, and recognize that we can't continue to create middle-class entitlements like you were just talking to with Representative Coinga? I'm certainly that is a way to make yourself popular, but I hardly think it is responsible budgeting.
I wanted to also ask you about the change that occurred from Governor Walker's proposed expansion of the private school voucher program to 9 different districts to this full statewide expansion that has been passed. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, you need to understand that if the listeners are having a hard time keeping up with what's going on in Madison, trust me, they're not alone. For us legislators, it is extremely difficult when decisions are made in the middle of night and behind closed doors. I was under the impression last Tuesday that we were headed towards some sort of a reasonable compromise, such as requiring a referendum for expansion in a very limited number of communities. I woke up a day later and hear some sort of a deal has been brokered to expand statewide. I believe a lot of my constituents believe, as I travel around my district, that what we are witnessing is the dismantling of our public school, and I believe that this will become the death knell for many small districts in my part of the state, districts like Weston and Waniwok, Cassville and Potosi. We can't adequately support one statewide school system. Why on earth would we want to create a second? It just makes no sense. And what I think, Joy, that many of my colleagues from urban areas don't understand is that in our part of the state, our schools are the centers of our communities. It's not just where we educate our kids. It's where we gather for sporting events, arts, cultural, and community events. An attack like what is being proposed is seen by many as an attack on our communities, and there is more concern than I ever imagined we would have for schools. And when we suddenly find ourselves in a situation where, we can define poverty for a family of four for private and school vouchers at $70,000, plus a year, but a family of four making $24,000 a year is too wealthy for Medicaid. There's something wrong with our priorities, and I just feel we have become way too extreme.
Well, we only have a minute to go. I read that you might have a more conservative Republican run against you in a primary because of your more moderate views. What's your reaction to that?
Well, look, the people in the last election made it very clear to me. They asked me, Dale, go to Madison, help balance the budget, get rid of this structural deficit. Let's be responsible and work with everybody. I have tried to do that, and I'm continuing to try to do that. I am totally focused on this state budget, working on it with my colleagues. There'll be time for a campaign, Joy, next year. And traditionally, I have made up my mind, in the holiday season before election year after discussing things with my family. And I've just made it clear I'm not going to be baited or bullied or anything else into getting involved in a campaign. It's great drama, but it's very poor in terms of helping people focus on a budget.
Thank you so much.
My assemblyman certainly can do that. That's his right, but I'm somewhere else.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You bet, Joy. Have a great day.
Dale Schultz, Republican State Senator from Richland Center. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Robin Cherry, to Justin Williams, and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.